Not really. It's actually about the Gilad Root, and it's in memory of Dr. Chuck Feldman, Zichrono Lebracha. As I've mentioned in the past, we're close to the family and happy that we could do this. So there's the issue of Megillat Rut. I would put it this way. It's like, what is Megillat Rut really about? I mean, you know, you could either tell a story or not tell a story. What was it that was so important about the story of Megillat Rut that gave it such a special standing in our tradition? First of all, it's a Megillah, which means that it has certain halachic parameters. It's written with the Ketav Sofer. And today it's very popular. When I was a kid, this was not the case, but today it's very popular to lay in Megillat Rut from a cloth. We call it a cloth. We mean a scribally written on parchment. Looks like a Sefer Torah. A little Sefer Torah. And like Megillat Esther. Everybody knows Megillat Esther. You read from a Megillah, which is usually made out of some kind of cloth and written by a sofer. And it has certain... It's a little more exalted than reading it out of a chumash, which is sort of like, you know, printed. And it's hard to get too excited about it. But Megillat Esther, I have kind of a feeling that I know what the connection between Megillat Esther and Purim is. I mean, it's all in there. All of Purim is in Megillat Esther. The other Megillot that I read during the year, this is not so clear. It's not so clear. Okay, Eicha, the Megillah of Eicha, that makes sense. You know, it belongs to Churban Bayit Rishon specifically. We can make it work for Churban Bayit Sheni, also with a little bit of a stretch. But those are the two Megillot that really connect to the time that we read them. A Megillah called Kohelet, we don't want to go into now, but it's hard to imagine why we read Kohelet on Sukkot. Okay, I don't know. And we have Megillat Rut. Did I miss out one? Shira Shirim. There's all these three Megillot, Kohelet, Shira Shirim, and Rut, are traditionally connected to a Chag. But it's not easy for us to know today what the exact connection between those three Megillot and the Chag that they're connected to is. Like Kohelet with Sukkot, and Shir HaShirim with Pesach, and Rut with Shavuot. But Rut, I mean, has another problem to it. And I would say it this way. We don't really know what Megillat Rut is about. Everybody knows that somehow Gmilut Chasadim, you know, this idea that you have to be nice to each other, which is maybe not so popular today and doesn't have a lot of supporters. But Gmilut Chasadim sounds like something important, something that, you know, we could push. And somehow Gmilut Chasadim is associated with Megillat Rut, although in all honesty, I haven't got really much of an idea of where the Gemilut Chasadim is in Megillat Rut, as I will try to show you. I mean, so let's look first at the first chapter. Also, I have no... this shir is different, because I have no sources other than the Megillah itself. So if we look at the Megillah, I'll try to interpret it quickly, and then try to tell you what the problems are in the interpretation. Okay, so we know Shoftim, that was a period in Jewish history, right? After the Jews came to Eretz Canaan and conquered it, and divided up the land, this took until the mitzvot of Atliot Ba'aretz were given, it took 21 years, and then after that time, there was a period of Shoftim, which how we could describe it. It was a period of charismatic leadership.
Max Weber.
Max Weber, very good. You see that broad general education, it always helps. So charismatic leadership meant that I think everybody did whatever they did. From time to time, they needed a national response, like when the Midianites, for example, decided to dismember the community of Jews in Eretz Canaan. So they had to muster up an army. To muster up an army, you need a leader. That leader is the charismatic leader that Max Weber was talking about. So that's Bimei Shvot HaShoftim. They were Shoftim. Dvorah, as you know, was one of them, who determined matters of dispute. I would say, you know, people, you owe me, I owe you, let's go to the Shofet, who will decide? So it was a period of time when there was a nation, but that nation didn't generally work together except in periods of severe stress. And then there was a charismatic leadership, hopefully there would be one, who was able to save us. That's Yimei Shvot HaShoftim. So the Shoftim are between Yoshua bin Nun and Shaul HaMelech, let's say. Shaul HaMelech, right? Shaul HaMelech, who was the king of Israel, although there was something wrong with him, with Shaul HaMelech, something wrong with him which prevented him from creating a dynasty, because the proper king, which turned out to be David HaMelech, the proper king was able to create a dynasty. A dynasty doesn't mean, apparently, that all of the future is guaranteed to be good. I mean, after all, the many kings of Yehuda and Israel were bad kings. But they were kings by virtue of the fact that they were born to a king. They were born to a king. And you know, they're like a couple of Shaul HaMelech, the first king of Israel. The Ramban asked that question, what would have happened if King Shaul was a good guy instead of being a bad guy? So the Ramban says, well, I guess that there would have been then two kings in Israel. Shaul would be a dynasty, and David HaMelech will be a dynasty. And that's eventually what happened, but for a different reason. Right? After Shlomo HaMelech, who built the Beit HaMikdash and taxed the Jews severely for the Mikdash, apparently the Mikdash, the kingship, the trappings of kingship generated. So after he died, the people were unable to suffer his kind of leadership. And so they asked his son, whose name was Rechavam, they asked his son, you know, to ease up. They can't do it. They can't. And so Rechavam said, "Well, things are bad, they're going to be worse, because I also have a few things that I want to spend money on." So at that time, there was a split in the nation, which had been under the kingship first of Shaul, and then David, and then Shlomo, and then it came to an end. Then it was split. There was the northern kingdom, which was called the northern kingdom, and the southern kingdom, which was eventually called Yehuda. Right? So the northern kingdom, they brought in a pinch hitter as king of the northern kingdom. It's a kind of a mystery because his name was Yeravam ben Nevat. And he was crowned king of the northern kingdom by a real prophet, whose name was Achiah Shiloni. So you would think, one would imagine, even though you're not supposed to ask these kinds of questions, one would imagine that if the king of the northern kingdom was crowned, anointed by a real prophet, whose name was Achiah Shiloni, that the result should be positive. But in fact, Yeravam ben Nevat, the Gemara says, probably the worst king of all, or at least numbered amongst the worst, who tried even to get people to stop going to Yerushalayim, which was really in the southern kingdom, the northern part of Yehuda. Also Binyamin. You know, Yehuda and Binyamin were kind of joint owners of the Beit HaMikdash, of the area of the Beit HaMikdash. So Yeravam ben Nevat, found it embarrassing that people from the northern kingdom wanted to go to Yerushalayim to express devotion. So he tried to stop them by setting up religious centers in his kingdom, in the north, to kind of replace or come instead of Yerushalayim. Eventually, because of a combination of reasons, one was the fact that, of course, the northern kingdom was destroyed in 722 BCE by Sancheriv, and so that whole idea passed, and Yerushalayim was left as the capital of the southern kingdom. A lot of people have been talking recently about the fact that Yerushalayim is the eternal capital of the Jewish people, whatever that might mean. And the word eternal is always a tough word, but I guess for some people it goes easier than for others. So in any event...
Why didn't Yahushua appoint a successor like Moshe did?
Appointing successor, there were Nevi'im who were successors to Yahushua. It was Yahushua had several portfolios, you would say today. Right? He was the military king, and he was the king, and he was the prophet, and like Moshe Rabbeinu. He wasn't the Kohen. So he had successors. And it was that after the kibbush of Eretz Yisrael, you didn't need a permanent military leader. There was no reason to have a successor to the military leadership. I mean, I'm just telling you a svara that, you know, if history had been different, so we would say a different svara. But that seems to me that that's not like a super kasha. Like, you know, it's how it worked out. Yahushua was a Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu, but they needed a military leader during the time of Yahushua's life. After Yahushua died, they didn't need that kind of military leader. They needed local power authority, and that came from the Shoftim. So during this time, it says, Vayihira av ba'aretz. Vayihira av ba'aretz. Now you know that Vayihira av ba'aretz, Avram Avinu, right? We've been looking for conceptual reference points. Avram Avinu, Vayihira av ba'aretz, he went to Egypt. Yitzchak, Vayihira av ba'aretz, wanted to go to Egypt. He wanted to go to Egypt because his svara was, Yitzchak, I'm talking about Yitzchak. If my father did it, why shouldn't I do it? I mean, that's apparently the right thing to do. You could say the right thing to do in Eretz Israel, if your name is Avram Avinu or your name is Yitzchak, that you should depend that God will take care of it. But Yitzchak said, I mean, even if I was willing to do that, I mean, it would be insulting not to do what my father did. My father went to Egypt. It turned out very well. It was a terrific, terrific project. So I'll also go to Egypt. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yitzchak, don't go to Egypt. Don't go to Egypt. Now it's also interesting that Yaakov Avinu and his family, right? The Pasuk says that Yaakov, Avram and Yitzchak, Yaakov. Yaakov was in Mitzrayim for 17 years before he died. The last 17 years of his life, he was in Mitzrayim. During that time in Mitzrayim, the Torah says that in Mitzrayim, the Egyptians became disenfranchised, right? They didn't have any money to buy food. So Yosef said, give me your land and I'll give you food, right? That's what happened in Egypt. And then all the land in Egypt became the property of Paro, except for the land of the Kohanim, except for the land, right? Do you remember this story? Mm-hmm. Except for the land of the Kohanim. Then everything else became the property of Paro. The people of Egypt were disenfranchised. They didn't own anything. They didn't own any property. They didn't own any animals. They didn't own... everything was given away for the sake of the food that they needed. The only people in Egypt who had land, besides the Kohanim, were the Jews, which may be why, you know, how anti-Semitism got started. But the Jews had land in Goshen. Yosef didn't take that away from them. But the pasuk says that Yosef gave them food. It doesn't say he took money for the food that he gave them. Now, it might have been that the Jews at that time were a very small group, and it didn't really matter to whoever was counting in Egypt. But it's interesting. It's interesting that Avram goes to Egypt. There's a famine, and he comes back rich. Yitzchak wanted to go to Egypt, but he didn't go. He went to the land of the Plishtim instead, and he also came back rich. Okay, a little bit different. And then Yaakov went to Mitzrayim. Yaakov went and lived the 17 years at the end of his life, and he reversed, and it somehow was reversed. He became rich. Everybody else became poor. So Vayihira Av Ba'aretz, all I mean to say is that those words, Vayihira Av Ba'aretz, are not only words that tell us about a physical reality, like there was a famine, but the associations make us wonder. Make us wonder, like, what's really happening? What's this Av Ba'aretz? And according to the story of Megillat Ruth, one family went to Moab. One family, and we don't hear about anybody else going to Moab or coming back. It's almost as though, and who goes to Moab? It says here, I assume that the writing is insulting to the Ish, right? Instead of naming him immediately, which is what you do, you start a story about a person by naming the person. Here they don't name him; they call the Megillah calls him Ish. Ish, that's like, you know, not important. He's not important. He's not somebody whose name is memorable, even though his name comes up soon. He says, "Mibet Lechem Yehuda Lagur B'Shtei Moav Hu VeIshto U'Shtei Banav Hu VeIshto V'Shtei Banav." He again, who and Ish is unnamed. Shem Ha'ish, the second pasuk. Shem Ha'ish Elimelech V'Shem Ishto Naomi V'Shem Shtei Banav Machlon V'Chilion Efratim Mibet Lechem Yehuda V'Yavo Shtei Moav V'Yusham. So he came from Beit Lechem. Beit Lechem is a city in Yehuda, right? We know where that is. Right, it's south of Yerushalayim. Everything south of Yerushalayim is called Yehuda. At some time or other, I don't know when the Megillah was written down in its final redaction, but that doesn't matter. Vayavo stay Moav Yisham. Now Moab are traditionally not friendly to the Jews. Apparently, at this time, it was like in between. It was a time in between the last time the Moabites fought against the Jews and the next time that the Moabites are going to fight against the Jews. It was very easy, apparently, for Jews to live in Moab because the language of the Moabites is very similar to Hebrew. It's very similar to Hebrew. It's not the same as, but it's very similar to...
Hebrew.
So you listen again. We have a stone on which there is a discipline. Well, when I say we, I mean like grandly speaking. We have a stone which is called the Moabite stone, because we call it the Moabite stone because it's about a Moabite king whose name was Mesha, Mem Yud Shin Ayin. Mesha is also the Lithuanian pronunciation of Moshe, but there's no connection, right? Mesha Melech Moab. So you could read it and probably understand it.
Where is it?
I think in the British Museum, but the pictures, we have a new thing called pictures. You don't have to go anywhere anymore. And it's even better in the picture than it is in real thing. Well, I think I saw it. I think it's at the British Museum. But maybe not. I mean, I don't remember, like, really clearly. But the Moabite stone is written in Moabite. That's the trick here. Now you can more or less understand it with a little kind of little tweaking here and there. You can understand what it is. Why am I telling you this? Because it was very easy for someone who spoke Hebrew or something of like that was Canaanite, and somebody who wanted to go to another place, to a place where you might be more successful. And that was Moav. That was Moav because you understood each other. You could understand the language that they spoke. Right? And besides which, it could be that already in those days, Aramaic was kind of the lingua franca of the Middle East, which happened sometime or other, right, in those days. It wasn't Babylonian, it wasn't Assyrian, it was Aramaic. Aramaic became the lingua franca of the Middle East. That means the people who wanted to trade, the people who wanted to, from different countries, wanted to talk to each other, they probably talked to each other in Aramaic. So Aramaic, if you know Hebrew, you can get along, listen to somebody talking Aramaic. Not today, but in those days, it would be, it's like listening to somebody talk Ungulus, right? You could figure it out after a while. You'll figure it out. It wouldn't be obvious, but after a while, you'd get it. So that's why they went. That may be why they went to stay in Moab. So that's the story. Then the story continues. This is the background. A little more. Elimelech doesn't have much of a play here in the Megillah. He was alive, he went to Moab, and then he died. So she's in a bad situation. Naomi. She's in a bad situation because she's not connected to anything. There's no larger group which everybody looks for. Like if you think about your own lives, you'll realize that that's what you do most of your life. You're trying to look for a group that will a support. What do they call it? Support system. Right. That's what you want. What everybody wants. Vayish pasuk dalit. Vayishalu lehem nashim. Vayisu lehem nashim moaviyot. Shem achad arpa v'shem hashini drut v'yifisham ge'eser shanim. So I think that this means that these two communities were integratable. Like you could marry a Moabite woman. I mean, she might not be Jewish, but who said you have to marry a Jewish woman? I mean, like, where did that idea come from? So, you know, it's like it wasn't something frowned upon, at least not in the Megillah. There's nothing, no rebuke. They're not rebuked for marrying Moabite women.
But the Torah said a Moabite male should not come into your...
But I don't know when that drasha was made, you know. I mean, let's just read the Megillah. Mm-hmm. What do you mean the Megillah? I understand there's a drasha, Amoni, Velo, Amoni, Abiseder, but I would like
to... The sons died early.
What?
The sons died early. Was that a punishment for marrying
them? What do you mean they died early?
Yeah.
But that's the next passage. We didn't read that yet.
I've read.
They died early last year also. He says, Vayamutu gam shnehem machlon v'chilyon v'teshay isha v'shnei yelatem isha. So she's really alone. Right? It could be that they died as a punishment. It could be not, but it doesn't say that in the Megillah. I like to try to stick to what it says in the Megillah. It says they died, but the reason, the point of their dying, or the point that the Megillah makes is v'teshayer ha'isha v'shnei yelatem isha. It's about Naomi. I mean, they died, so there must have been a reason for them dying. But as a result of them dying, here's Naomi alone in a foreign country, no husband, and no children. That's what happened. Pasuk Vav, Vatakam hi v'chalotera, Vatasha mistei Moav, ki shama mistei Moav, ki pakad Hashem et amo latet lahem lechem. So she's thinking about what to do with herself. As she heard that God has kind of released Canaan, the land of Canaan, from the famine. and that maybe it's time to go back. Maybe it's time to go back. Zion, pasuk Zion, v'teitzei min ha'makom ashayta shama shtei kalotei ima v'teilachna v'derech lashuv el eretz Yehuda. So she start off with her kind of little family. She and her two daughters-in-law. That's all. I mean, so if you're not a feminist, you have to agree that this is a weak position, right? A woman with two daughters-in-law, no husband, no husbands, apparently no families in Moab that they could turn to, and there's just the idea that there's food to be eaten in Eretz Kinah. Pasuk Chet. V'tomer Naomi l'shtei kalotei, lechna shovna asher lebeit isha lebeit ima ya'atza Hashem imachem chesed kasher asidem imaitim imadi. So here is his Naomi. And it's hard to know what the point that Naomi is making. But let's say she's thinking about going back to her home where she came from. Is she going to be better off schlepping along two women who are not Jewish to that ancient home and then trying to get a deal, trying to reestablish herself in some way? Or is she better off going alone? So I don't know the answer to that question. But if you see the pasuk, he says l'shtei kalotei lechna shovna isha lebeit ima yasa Hashem imachem chesed kasher sidim imamiti veimadi. It's like she's saying, look, this is doubtful and that's doubtful. I don't know if going back to Beit Lechem is going to be good for us, or staying in Midian is good for us. But you have connections in Midian, so take advantage of them. Right? Do whatever you do. Pasuk Tet, Yitein Hashem lechem etzana mulcha isha beit isha, vatishak lehem, vatisedek olan, vativkena. So there was some kind of connection that they had, that the girls had with Naomi. Pasuk Yud, vatomarna la. So he said, no, we want to go back with you. We want to go back with you. I guess the Midianites are also not happy about the fact that these women married Canaanite men. I mean, that's, you know, you may have noticed that in the world, this is like the way it works. You have to marry your own kind. Somebody said that once. And if you marry another kind, so you're in trouble. So these women, Naomi and Orpah, I mean Ruth and Orpah, they were in trouble because they were married to foreigners. And being married to a foreigner is not so good. Especially if you're a woman. If you're a woman and married to a foreigner, the assumption is that you're going to leave your home and go with the foreigners. That's how it worked in the ancient world. It may work that way today also to a certain extent. So, Pasuk Yud, V'tomarna laki itach lashuv la'amech. No, we'll come back with you. V'tomenami shovna binotai lamate lachna imi haodli banim b'me'ai v'ayu lachem lanashin. Now, what exactly is she talking about? Naomi says, haodli banim. Just 1 second. Only banim b'me'ai. Do I have any more potential sons in my innards? I mean, okay, she doesn't. She's not going to have any more babies. What's it got to do with the question? She said, stay home. They said, we want to go with you. So she said, are you going to be able to marry my son? Like, what if she had a son next year who would be born? So you figure 20 years to wait till they grow up. I mean, what is she talking about exactly? Haodli banim b'me'ai. I'm sure the daughters-in-law understood that she was of an age where she probably wouldn't have any children. She also didn't have a husband, which is sometimes necessary. V'ayu lachem lanashim. much. It's pasuk yud bet. Shona benatay lechna ki zakanti miyod leish ki amati yesh li tikva gam hayiti alayla leish vegam yaladati bani. So this is a the future. The whole story is it's like a Shakespearean hint. This is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen in the story. This is the story. Should I read it again? Yud bet. Shovna benotai. Lechna. Go back. Ki zakanti. What does zakanti have to do with anything? Well, because meyot leish, I'm not going to be married to a person. Ki amarti yesh li tikva. Because I can't say. Ki amarti. I can't say. What can't I say? What can't I say? Yesh li tikva. I have that kind of hope. What kind of hope is it? I can't say that. I can't say that I'm going to have relations with a man and produce children. I can't say that. Why can't I say that? Because I'm old. But what does this got to do with what we're talking about? The women want to go with Naomi because they love her. She doesn't want them to go with her because I'm old, I can't have children. I mean, it's like a throwback also to Sarah Imenu, but it'll take us a little far afield to get the connections. But what exactly is Naomi saying to these girls? Well, what she is saying is that if she was young, and if she was able, then there would be hope. There would be hope if she could have children. If she could give birth to children, she could marry somebody and have children. There would certainly be hope for this project of going back to Eretz Kanan. But since she cannot give birth and have children, so there's no hope. So that's the story in this Saint Shakespearean model. This is what's going to happen. This is what Naomi wanted. And that's exactly what is going to happen. What is going to happen? Well, she's going to marry a younger man. And she's going to have children. And I'm going to prove it to you. Who am I talking about? Who are we talking about? We're talking about Naomi. Right, Naomi? The old lady? That's who we're talking about? Yet she said, Naomi said, I'm old, I can't marry, I can't have children. Right? And what is the story of Megillat Ruth? That Naomi does get married, does have children, does get everything straightened out. Naomi, not anybody else. So now look.
What story is this?
This story that we're going to see in a minute.
Naomi gets married.
I didn't say she gets married. I said married.
Yeah,
I said she's going to have a husband and she's going to have children. And just like she said, I can't do this, and I can't do that, and I can't do that. And that's exactly what's going to happen. That's exactly what's going to happen. Let's go on. Again, where am I? Yud Gimel. Alahei tisaberna adashay yigdalo alahei tehagena levil diyot liish. Al benotai gimai limod bikev giyatsa bi yad Hashem. So Naomi says, I just don't see how you girls are part of this project. What I have to do is figure out a way to have children. I have to figure out a way to marry somebody. What's this got to do with you? Who's interested in you? Who's interested in Moabite women? There must be a couple of Jewish women in Canaan. Halahein, I'm sorry, again, Pasuk Yudalit. Vatisena kolan vativkena od vatishak o balakamotav rutav kaba. So you see that vatishak, I always say this, vatishak in Hebrew means goodbye. In romantic novels it means hello, but in the Tanakh it means goodbye. How do you say hello? How do you say like a real fervent kind of hello? Dveikut. That's fervent hello. And that's what happened, right? That's what happened. Orpa v'tishak orpa l'chamuta Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye. Verut davkaba. And Ruth was cleaving to her. Cleaving to her. So davka, that's closeness. And the shika is goodbye. Vatomer, pasuk tedvav, vatomer yinei shavei vintech alamah, vem elohea shuvi acharei yevimtech. So here we have the introduction of a word which is meaningful in the context of Megillat Rut. And even though it's a kind of a mystery, the word Yevimtech, it's a kind of a mystery because it doesn't fit into our halachic preconceptions, but apparently the word Yevamah could also mean two women could be somehow related to each other. The word Yevamah in the Chumash is, according to the way we understand it, is a man marries and has no children and his wife dies. He dies and his wife has no children, so she can marry the brother, or she should marry, or could marry, or would marry. We sort of did away with that obligation, but that's called a yavam. And the point of this project is Lakim Shem, to establish a name, an ongoing tradition, a name of the brother who died. There's some kind of, this is very important, and it happens. So here the word Yivama is used in a different way. Pasuk tedva b'nei shava yivim teich elama ve'el Eloheha. That's the words that I'm interested in. In other words, it was it could go either way, right? Orpah, she would have stayed with Naomi, would have been on our side, but she went back home, so she was side of the gods of Midian. The gods of Midian were not particularly nice people. So, Elamah v'Eloheha, shuvi acharei yevimtech. So Naomi says, go, and she hints at this Yevamah by calling the other daughter-in-law a Yevamah. You have another hint for what's going to happen in the Megillah, in the continuation of the story. Whoever wrote this down couldn't help themselves. Again, pasuk tet zayin.
Foreshadowing.
But Yevamah here is meaning your fellow daughter-in-law.
I don't know what it means. I know what it means in the Chumash, but it's used in a different way here. Yeah. The two daughters-in-law are called Yevamot to each other, which doesn't mean much to the halachic understanding of things. But it's the use of a word that's going to come in, become very important in the continuation of the story. Okay? Pasuk tedvav. Vatomer hinei shava yevimtech elamah v'Eloheha, shuvi acharei yevimtech. So you go back also. In other words, he says to Ruth, look, you could also be a Midianite woman. Go ahead. What?
Moabite.
A Moabite woman. You could also be, serve the god of Moab. You could serve the god of Moab. Pasuk tet zayin. Vatomer Ruth, al tifkei bi lazvech, lashuv me'acharayach. Gel asher telchi eilech, v'asher talini alina mechami v'vayach Elohai. Okay. So I mean, you have to decide. Is this, did she say, I want to be with you, I have no place else to go? And I understand that the implication is, Elohai, Elohai, wherever you'll be, I'll be. Is that the implication? Or is she saying, I am like that? I really want to be like that. You understand the two possibilities? Vatome root al tivki bilozvech, pasuk tet zayin. Lashu mecharayim, ki elashetelechi, eilech. So what does that mean? Does it mean Ruth understood that they were going to Eretz Yisrael and they were going to Nachalah and she had this tremendous spiritual opportunity? Or does it just mean, I don't really have any place else to go? And I would like to stay with you. It's not clear. Not clear. And then pasuk yud zayin, b'ashet amut yamut v'shamekaver But she quotes God's name, Kol Yaseh Hashem Li, right? It could be interpreted to mean that she was speaking the language, the religious language of her mother-in-law. Pasuk Yudchet, Vatera ki mitametzet hi lalechet ita vatechtal ledaber eleha. So Naomi gave in. Lama gave in. Why did she give in? I mean, what was it, the profit? What was the advantage that Naomi had of giving in? Why did she give in? Again, see the pasuk. You see the pasuk. Pasuk Yudchet. Vatera ki mitametzeti. She's really struggling to be included in the trip that Naomi is about to make, right? Metametziti lalechet ita vatechdal ledaber elah. So what? She decided that she can't influence her. Okay, she has this mishigas. She wants to come, so she can come. Vatelachna shtehem ad bo'ana beit lechem. It's not so far from the land of Midian. I mean, you know, it's a bit of a trip, but it's not terrible. They left us. They had at Boana Beit Lechem till they came back to Beit Lechem. Vayhi ki Boana Beit Lechem, vateichom kol ha'ir aleihem, vatomana azot Naomi. So you see, they came back to Beit Lechem, and lo and behold, who came back to Beit Lechem?
Wow. Who? Only one
person came back to. It was like Sancho Panza. Yeah. You know.
Don Quixote and Sancho
Panza.
I didn't mean to start this. Start this over. But in other words, she doesn't exist. Her name is Ruth. Yeah. Ruth does not exist when they come back to Beit Lechem. Why the whole city came out to be, to express their joy at the fact that Naomi has returned, is not so clear from the pasuk. Vatoshav Naomi Ruta Moabiyah Kalataima Ashava Mistei Moab. There's a comment of whoever wrote the Megillah. Veim Bal Beit Lechem Bitchilat Ktzir HaSorim. And this could be the only connection to Shavuot. Shavuot takes place at the time of the Ktzir HaSorim. But there's nothing about it. So in any event, my first contention is that Naomi, I mean, if you go through chapters Bet and Gimel and Dalet, which we're not going to do right in the Bet and Gimel, I'm sorry, we have to do Perek Dalet. My first contention is that the story is about Naomi. The story is about Naomi. Even though chapters 2 and chapter 3 tell the very exciting story of Ruth's relationship with Boaz, and Boaz gets the call, the Ploni Almoni is going to be able to take up the reins of Geula, of redeeming the family fortune through marriage to Ruth. And he says, no, I can't do that. I don't want to do that. And along comes Boaz on a white steed. And Boaz marries her, and everybody's living happily ever after, and it's wonderful. But look at the last chapter. Look at the last chapter. That's the story. The story. Oh. Boaz Allah Shah. Boaz went up to the gate of the city. The gate was where important they like the canyon was at the gate. Right? You know, whatever you wanted to buy, that's where you went. So he says, Vayeshev Shabinego Elover. Asher Diber Boaz Vamasura Shabba Ploni Almoni Vyasa Vayeshev. Ploni Almoni became the kind of like John Smith. You say in English, right, John Smith means anybody. It's not a particular person. So Ploni Almoni is also somebody. Like, not only is he unimportant in the story, but his name is unimportant. Which is pretty remarkable. Because you could have just said the Goel without naming him. They said, no, his name is Ploni Almoni. He really is fading into oblivion. Pasuk Bet. They took 10 people. That's you needed a minion to do this. Vayomer LaGoel Chakata Sadecha Vechinu Lemli Melech Bachra Naami Ashava Misedei Moab. So we're talking about property, land, and who sold it, and who's going to get it. Not on me, right? Vani Amad Deglel Azlechale Mor. Kinei neged ha-yoshvim neged zikmei amim tigal ga'ol v'im lo yigal agidu li veida ki ein zulatcha ligol v'anoche acherecha v'amor anoche egal. So he says to Plony Almoni, he says, it's you or me. If you do it, you do it. If I do it, if you don't do it, then I'll do it. So the Plony Almoni says, I'll do it. Oh, a low point in the story. This will mess up the whole story if he would do it. So the pasuk hey says, "Vayom Boaz, Vayom Kedot Chas, Adem Yad Naomi, Abedruv the Moavia, Eishet Amet, Kanita Lakim Shem Amet Al Nachalato, Vayom Goel Lo Chaligol Li Pen Ashchit Et Nachalati Gaalecha Ata Et Gulati Ki Lo Chaligol." So Plovi Amoni says to Boaz, "I can't do this. I'm tied up in the bank, you know, I have mortgages, I can't do it, you do it." So great, the story is saved at the last moment. Here comes Boaz riding to the, and then there's a pasuk explains what he's about to do. Pasuk chet v'yomer ha'goel le'boaz k'nei lecha, v'yishlof na'alo, that's how they did it, the took off the shoe. But I mean, we could make comments on all of these things, but I want to get to the important part here. Vayom Boaz laskeni v'kol ha'medim atem hayom ki kaniti et kol asher le'elimelech v'kol asher le'chilyon u'machlon miyad na'ami. I bought everything that they ever owned. I've got it all. Miyad na'ami. V'gam edruta mo'aviya ishet machlon kaniti li le'isha la'kim shem ha'meit al nachlato v'lo yitaret shem ha'meit me'im echav u'mishar mekomo edim atem hayom. So the deal is done. The deal is done, and the deal has to do with Karka. It has to do with the marriage of Ruth to Boaz. So it's great. Everything is just great. Now look at this. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomru kol ha'am asher b'shar v'azkenim eidim yitein Hashem et ha'isha ba'al beitcha ki Rachel u'kleya asher banu shteihem et beit Yisrael v'asei chayil be'efrata. So he said, hey, they come like the whole world is there, collected, to say this is the greatest thing that has ever happened. Naomi will get what she deserves, and Ruth is going to marry this handsome, farming type. So, Pasuk Yud Bet, Vayi Beitcha Kebeit Peretz, Asha Yoda Tamar Liyuda. I'm not sure that this is a compliment or not, but in any event, Vayikach Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayikach Boaz and Ruth Vadilo Lisha, Vayavo Elel. Boaz married Ruth, and he had a sexual intercourse with her. Vayavo Elel, Vayitein Hashem La Herayon, and God gave her pregnancy. Vayitein Hashem La Herayon, Vatelet Ben, yay! And she had a son. Like, this is the happiest story in the Tanakh. Everything works out. Everything works out for everybody. Everybody's happy. But look at what it says right here. Right here. Pasuk Yudalit. Vatomarna hanashim el Naomi. Who is the mother? Huh? Who is the mother?
Ruth.
Ruth is the mother. That's what you say. Vatomarna hanashim el Naomi. Baruch Hashem. Asher lo hishpit lach goel hayom. Thank God that you didn't have trouble finding a goel, a redeemer, for all of your property and everything you needed by Yikrash Mo B'Yisrael, and he gets a name, B'Yisrael, meaning her son. Pasuk Tetvav, Vayalach lemeshiv nefesh, ulechalkel et sevatech, and you're going to have a pension, right? You're going to feel good, right? You're going to really, really feel good. And you have a pension. Because your daughter-in-law had a son. Asher he tova lach mishiva banim. And this daughter-in-law is even better than seven sons. I guess that's good. Okay? Pasuk tet zayin, v'tikach Naomi et hayelet. Who took the yelet? Now, it's not so uncommon, right? The grandmother takes care of the baby. Not totally uncommon. That's like in Russia. Well, I was in Russia. That's a family. There's a husband, a wife, a grandmother, a baby, and a dog. That was a family. Now, it was hardest on the dog because there wasn't that much room. V'tikach Naomi et hayelet v'tishitehu b'cheika. Sometimes it's the sister who does it, like Miriam and Yocheved, of course. And sometimes it is the grandmother. Sometimes the grandmother. Not pasuk yud zayin is the end of the story. The last pasuk of the story. And all of the women who were with around, you know, women, they would hover around, and they, Vatikren Allah, Shechenot, Shem Leimor, Yulad Ben Lenaomi. That's what they said. They said, Naomi had a son. Like, wasn't that the point? Wasn't the point of the story when Naomi said, if I could only marry, if I could only have a child, then I could straighten everything out. Because I would be able to go through this gulat hakarkaot and property. So Rashi doesn't say anything. But the pasuk says, V'atikach Naomi te'yelet shtei b'cheikah v'ti lo lo manet, pasuk yudzayim v'tikret alo ashkenot shem lemor. Shem Leimor. Yulad ben Lenami. Vatikre na Shemo Oved. Hu Avi Yishai Avi David. So Oved, according to these women who were standing out, who understood what really happened, understood that Ruth was the agent. She was the, what do you call that today?
Surrogate.
A surrogate. She, thank you. She was a surrogate. Who was having the baby?
Ruth was the surrogate.
Ruth was the surrogate. Who was having the baby? Naomi was having the baby. Now, whether that's... In other words, you see, if you read now, if you go back and you read the Megillah, you'll see that the Megillah is entirely about Naomi. It's about Naomi having a child. It's about Naomi being able to take advantage of the Goel. Even though we don't understand exactly how the Goel worked in this particular case, but we understand that after the Goel, Boaz, did whatever he did, the property that belonged to Elimelech, right, the dead husband, somehow reverted to the family of Naomi, which now consisted of Ruth and Boaz and Oved. Oved was the son that was born to Ruth, the surrogate, who was actually fulfilling somehow the need that Naomi had to reestablish herself as part of a family, as part of a family in Beit Lechem Yehuda. So it may be that the Megillah is called on the name of Ruth, but it may be that that's a misnomer, and that the Megillah is really about Naomi. And if you go back over the part that we skipped, you know, where Naomi sends Ruth into the field to lie with Boaz and to kind of entice him into something or other. So you see that she gives the orders. She knows what could happen. She, Naomi, she knows what could happen. Ruth doesn't know exactly. She's a Moabite. She doesn't know what the laws of Beit Lechem Yehuda necessitate, what she has to do. So Ruth serves a purpose. She's the younger version of Naomi, which enables Naomi to marry and to have a child. But having done that, the child is changes Naomi's status. It makes her a family, the leader of a family. It changes his, her state from what it was in Moab when her husband died, her sons died, and she had no reason to keep her daughters-in-law with her. So again, the point of the Megillah, maybe, to show that, you know, if you're dedicated and you know what you want, sometimes you could actually get it. Okay, have a happy, good Shabbos, and Chag Shavuot Sameach.
Chag Sameach.